All rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Michael P. Allen presiding. All who have business before this court, draw near and you will be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court.
Good afternoon. I'm Chief Judge Allen, and to my right is Judge Falvey. To my left is Judge Jaquith, and we are convened today to consider arguments in the matter of Robert O. Edwards, Jr. versus Douglas A. Collins, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, case number 24-6441. Would counsel, beginning with appellant's counsel, please enter your appearance for the record?
Stephanie, we've got the appellant with
my counsel, Lila Kanofsky. Nice to see you. Secretary?
Good afternoon, Your Honor. It's Jonathan Scratching on behalf of the Secretary of Veterans Affairs. With me at counsel's table is Deputy Chief Counsel Mark Vichich.
Thank you. And appellant's counsel, Ms. Laycock, are you going to reserve some time for rebuttal?
10 minutes, Your Honor.
All right. You can begin when you're ready.
Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. One of the issues in this case is how the constructive possession doctrine applies under the Appeals Modernization Act. The AMA did not eliminate the constructive possession doctrine. Rather, it merely changed the date when the record on appeal closes. VA's duty to assist and duty to develop the record remain the same prior to the close of the record. To the extent that 38 CFR 3.103C is applicable in this case, it is about how evidence submitted to the claims file is treated at different points in time during the claim, including evidence constructively received by VA. It is not synonymous with the claims file itself. Therefore, the court should hold that the constructive possession doctrine applies under the AMA. More broadly, the court should hold that the NAS updates are always constructively before the agency because VA has actual notice of the NAS updates and can reasonably be expected to investigate, gather, and consider the NAS updates when a disability is alleged to be caused by Agent Orange. Because the constructive possession doctrine was not eliminated by AMA, the board in this case was required to consider the NAS updates constructively before it and, based off of their contents, apply the McClendon test to determine whether remand was necessary for a VA examination.
So if we ruled in your favor on the constructive possession point, two questions. One, would we need to do anything else? And two, meaning address any other issue, and two, what would you want our remedy to be?
In this case, if you determined that constructive possession was, you know, continuing under the AMA, the only additional thing would be to remand the matter for the board to address the NAS updates and determine whether or not a VA examination was required under McClendon.
You're not giving up your final argument about the TARA exam, are you?
Certainly not. The court is more than welcome to address the TARA argument as well.
Okay, I've never heard it framed that way, that we're more than welcome.
The board did not address it.
This won't work if we're talking at the same time, all right? So all I'm trying to say is you want us to hold that constructive possession applies in the AMA, that the NAS updates are subject to constructive possession, and at that point, would you be okay if we simply then, if we ruled that way, remanded to the agency to consider the issues that might come up under McClendon generically or under the TARA statute?
As we did argue that the board did not address 38 USC 1168, the proper remedy under that would also be to remand for the board to consider 1168.
Now, let me ask you a separate question. What was the thinking about limiting your argument on McClendon with respect to the other board decisions to a reasons or bases remand only?
The thinking there is that under the AMA, the board doesn't have a duty to assist, and we wanted to emphasize that the board needed to address everything within the record to, under the AMA.
Well, so if the reasons are, the court recently issued a decision in a case called Medlin, which sort of articulated the reasons or basis requirement over the years. And fundamentally, what it said was the reasons or basis requirement is about making sure a claimant, and selfishly for me, the court, understands what the board did. That is different than saying that the board substantively erred in a particular way. And so you've limited yourself on the McClendon argument, at least as to the final board decisions in my eyes, to saying that I simply cannot understand what the board did. And so it seems to me that you didn't even cite the standard by which we assess whether the board inappropriately failed to get an exam, meaning the arbitrary and capricious standard and the built-in clear error standards for certain parts. So I just wanted to make clear that your argument really is that we just can't understand what the board did with respect to the other board decisions?
With respect to the other board decisions, the board, as Your Honor does point out, did not adequately address them.
Well, no, I didn't say that. I said that you, is it your position that the appellant has limited himself to the argument that we really can't understand what the board did with respect to the decisions? Because you didn't argue that the board was wrong about what it did. You argued that we can't understand what the board did. And I just want to make clear that that is that really the appellant's argument?
Our argument is what is presented in our briefs, yes.
You can continue.
Of course.
So why? I mean, why argue the reasons or bases standard and then argue that the board applied a standard higher than the statutory indication that a disability may be associated with active service?
Because that was the error in this case. That was the error on the face of this case, was that the board should have addressed the constructive possession doctrine, and it did not do so under the AMA.
But is that an explanatory error or something else?
It's a reasons and bases error. To not apply the law in that applies to the AMA in this case.
I mean, if we can follow the board's logic, we understand what they said and what they based their decision on, and we assess that the veteran could understand it also. Is it a reasons or basis error if the board just got it wrong with respect to application of McClendon and the VA regulation? It's not a reasons or basis error, right? So we could say there's no reasons or basis error, but there's a legal error on the application of McClendon and the regulation.
We would argue that our argument in the brief is that it is a reasons and bases error. And by not applying the constructive possession doctrine and not addressing the NAS updates, the board did not adequately explain itself to the veteran.
So are you, I think carefully in response to this question, okay? It sounds to me like what you're saying is your NAS update constructive possession argument is also a reasons and bases argument.
Our argument is as it was in our brief.
Okay, you have to stop saying that, because if we just wanted to read the briefs, we wouldn't be here in this courtroom. Mm-hmm. Okay, so is your constructive possession argument a substantive argument, or is it one that says that we can't understand what the board did?
It is a substantive argument.
Okay. So then why did you frame your McClendon argument only in reasons or basis terms?
Oh, Your Honor. Because that is the way we wished to present it to the court.
So if we were to say that the constructive possession doctrine applies and we were going to remand, would you be okay if we did not address your reasons or bases argument with respect to McClendon based on the other board decisions? Because the evidentiary record would be different on remand, which could affect whether or not there was an indication of a connection to service.
Appellant would... Appellant presented the argument to the court for it to be addressed. We do desire that the court address it.
Okay.
Does the veteran have a position on whether the board's finding of no indication that there may be a nexus is arbitrary, capricious, and abuse of discretion or not in accordance with the law?
We did not argue that it was not arbitrary and capricious, or that it was arbitrary and capricious. We argue that the McClendon argument was not sufficient to inform appellant whether remand was necessary for VA examination, and whether there was an indication that the disability or persistent or recurrent symptoms of a disability may be associated with the veteran service. As the board found that the veterans representative's mention of the 2012 or NAS update was not of record prior to the rating decision, and thus it may not consider it. That's not applying the McClendon standard and with respect to the NAS updates. And so the board would need to develop that argument more in order to inform the appellant of its decision.
But you just answered Judge Falvey to say that you're making a substantive challenge to the NAS update. So, I mean, in your view, there's nothing that the board could have said to support that argument, right? That the NAS updates weren't before it.
The board absolutely could have addressed the NAS updates. And
my question wasn't that they could, but in the appellant's view, there's nothing that the board could say that would establish that the record wasn't before the RO at the time of the the relevant decision because it was constructively possessed. That's your view, right?
I apologize. I don't quite understand the question.
Yeah, you were explaining to Judge Jaquette that this was that the board didn't sufficiently explain itself about the. I would have thought the appellant's position was there is nothing in the world that the board could say to justify the conclusion that the NAS report wasn't before the adjudicator. But it now seems like you're saying, well, maybe it's that the board could say something that would say that.
I apologize. I did misspeak earlier. The board absolutely could have addressed that the NAS updates were before it. And could have provided reasons and bases to adequately inform the appellant. However, in this case, it did not do so.
At the very beginning of your argument, I think you said that not only does the constructive possession doctrine survive, but with respect to the NAS updates, they are always constructively possessed. So what could the board say other than this has got to go back to the AOJ?
The board, if it had determined that the NAS updates were not applicable in this case, could have addressed the NAS updates and under the AMA, the board is perfectly capable of reading the medical evidence before it and providing a determination under McRae. The board in this case just did not address it. The board refused to address the NAS updates and under the constructive possession doctrine was required to do so.
What's your argument that it's always constructively possessed? What do you base that on?
The standard as elaborated by Eusebio.
Was whether the board constructively possessed the update, right?
That is correct, yes.
Now you're taking that to mean also that it's the AOJ also constructively possessed it? Because the record is limited to the...
That is correct. And as the AMA limited the record to, or limited the duty to assist and the duty to develop the record to the AMA, the constructive possession doctrine would be limited to the agency under the AMA. The board...
So you're willing to concede that even if, for example, we were to say that the constructive possession doctrine continues and what's changed is when a document that is constructively possessed may be considered... you're willing, from what you just said, to limit it only to the agency, not the board. And so then in the evidence submission context, are you telling me that in that context, the constructive possession doctrine doesn't apply?
The constructive possession doctrine would apply whenever the evidence window was open under AMA.
So it could apply to
it could apply to the board in the context of the evidence submission doctrine or the evidence submission window. As the AMA has provided veterans with this extra window of time where the record can be open. It's provided them with that choice of when to develop the record and when the window of opportunity would be open for the appellant to submit evidence, the constructive possession doctrine should apply in that window as well.
Well, why don't we hear from the secretary?
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mrs. Krebs.
Chief Judge Allen, Judge Falvey, Judge Japheth, good afternoon. May it please the court. The board's decision in this appeal is intelligible as it provides sufficient analysis for the appellant and this court to understand its rationale in finding that VA's duty to assist appellant with the medical exam had not been triggered. Appellant disagrees, but mere disagreement with the board's weighing and assessment of the evidence of record does not satisfy the burden of demonstrating prejudicial error. Accordingly, the court should affirm the August 5th, 2024 board decision. Appellant makes three specific arguments as to why the board's reasons or bases were not understandable. I assume that this argument was in specific to one of those arguments, but I'll address the other two quickly and then spend most of my time on that one that I think we're here for today.
And can I just jump in? And let me just maybe we can short circuit this a little bit. I think the elephant in the room you're talking about is the constructive possession argument.
Yes, Your Honor.
So just assume for a second, and I know you disagree, assume that we rejected the secretary's position and concluded that this report was constructively before the RO. At that point, wouldn't we just not address the other arguments in the case because the evidentiary record would be different under that hypothetical and remand for the agency to engage in whatever it thinks is appropriate to engage in now that the evidentiary record is different?
So the secretary would disagree, Your Honor, that it would end there on the determination that constructive possession applied. If constructive possession applied and that record was actually before the board, just as was done in the legacy system, the court could look at that record and determine whether any error in the board not looking at that record was prejudicial, which the secretary would argue in this case, it is not by the content.
Even after Tadlock and Stinson at the Federal Circuit, in other words, they say in the context of prejudicial error analysis, at least, if a matter is, quote, open to debate, that it's beyond our ability to find facts or to weigh evidence. So if we were to say, and I understand we're not talking yet about the actual constructive possession point, but if we were to conclude that the record was appropriately in the evidentiary mix for the board to consider, assume that. At that point, wouldn't we have to send it back because we couldn't make the determination in the first instance about there being an indication of connection to service?
Well, we think that, Your Honor, because the language in the updates are so determinative on this issue, that would fall within Tadlock because essentially it would amount to a remand without any benefit flowing to the veteran because everybody knows what that says, that there's no indication of an association between this condition and herbicide service. Herbicide exposure, so there would be no way that this could have a benefit. We would also add that the prejudicial analysis goes beyond just the text here. We have to look at what the AMA provides here. There's a real question. Congress, with the AMA, put forth an avenue that we shouldn't even be here litigating this because the appellant has the option of could have filed a supplemental claim months ago.
Does require more than on an initial claim, right? I mean, after Lloyd, if we're right in Lloyd, there's an extra hurdle. Now, it might be a tiny little hurdle, But it's a hurdle, which is you have to submit new and relevant evidence. Now, if Judge Jaquith is correct, maybe that in his dissent, and the Federal Circuit tells us that, then maybe the supplemental claim is the panacea. But it's an extra hurdle that we would be requiring somebody to submit.
But the sorry, Your Honor, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, but it would be it's an extra hurdle, right?
But the Secretary would argue that that is an intended feature, not a flaw in the AMA system, and that was part of the reason that Congress ensured that the bar for new and relevant evidence was set so low.
But it happens that we have cases in which the RO on a supplemental claim determines that there isn't new and relevant evidence. And what Lloyd said is if that happens and you appeal that, then the only issue before the board is new and relevant evidence, not the underlying claim. So why don't you get to your point about the actual notion of constructive possession? Because all of this only matters if we reject your argument that constructive possession was abolished.
Yeah, so the Secretary's position is that constructive possession in the AMA is limited to the explicit constructive receipt as espoused in the regulation 3.103. And that when you look at the rest of the statutory setup by Congress, that to allow for constructive possession, especially in the way that it was in the legacy system, it would be contrary to the intent Congress had with faster processing time, enhanced claimant choice, and a clear administrative record.
And so you're basing that on the creation of the evidence submission windows, the closing for direct review at one time, right, for example?
Right? We're basing it more than that, Your Honor. We're basing it on Congress's change to the notice statutes and enhanced notice. With that, it is clear that Congress not only wanted veterans to understand what evidence the AOJ considered when it rendered the original AOJ decision, but it also wanted VA to be able to produce that evidence if a veteran needed to review that evidence in order to make an informed choice about the review options.
Why would that have anything to do with constructive possession? I mean, the whole notion would be, constructive possession can be a very narrow thing. Right. I mean, the idea of relatedness and relevance or whatever the two R's that the Federal Circuit laid out in Azubio doesn't capture everything in the world. It might be that lots of things, I think Judge Falvey wrote a concurrence about this, lots of things aren't like the NAS report. Right. I mean, it's funny. You actually said in a few moments ago to me, well, everybody knows what the report says, right? And that's sort of the notion of we've got this stereotypical thing that is like the poster child for what might be this. And so it's odd that if Congress did these other things, changed the notice statute in the way we said, created the evidence submission portals, all to get rid of constructive possession. The one thing that's odd is that you can't point me to 38 USC blank that says constructive possession will no longer apply. It would seem like that would be the way Congress would do it.
Yes, but the court acknowledged in Andrews that Congress could abrogate implicitly if it doesn't, jive with the statute or make part of the statute or the intent superfluous. What I would say in response to you, constructive possession is an after-the-fact determination, right? But what Congress intended is in the moment for veterans to be able to understand what the agency of original jurisdiction considered in that decision, be able to tell the veteran what it considered, and to be able to produce it. If it's determined after the fact that there was a document or a report that was a part of the record at that time, what does that say about the veteran's choice?
Well, but I mean, to take this for example, you'd agree with me that before the RO, the duty to assist still applies. So, for example, the agency would have the responsibility to go out and get relevant government records outside the VA, right?
Uh-huh.
Right.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
So, yes, sorry.
So, and then, so when the notice comes out, right, the enhanced notice that you're talking about, and it doesn't list those records, it didn't list them because it didn't go get them, right? That would be an error.
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, why wouldn't we just say that if something is actually constructively possessed, just use the NAS report as an example, they don't list it in the evidence because they didn't go get it, even though it was constructively before them, let's just assume, then why wouldn't we just say that's an error, as opposed to saying that means that constructive possession doesn't apply anymore?
Well, I think the distinction we would make, well, first of all, when it comes to there's, as we noted in our plea, there's no duty to assist argument being made here. And so I think we would distinguish between records that are expected to be obtained by the secretary in 5103. Particularly, I would point to Little C that's talking about compensation claims and specific records there, and then something that could potentially be constructively possessed that is, again, an after-the-fact determination.
So you keep pointing to 3.103, right? So, and it's on this point that this duty to assist error point that you were raising, but because 3.103C little 2, not little 3, little 2,
mm-hmm.
It says the board or higher level review returns. A claim is pending re-adjudication after identification of a duty to assist error. And then this is the important part. In parentheses, it says, quote, which includes an error resulting from constructive receipt of evidence prior to the notice of decision. So I'm struggling to see how that phrase is consistent with the notion that there isn't constructive possession, constructive receipt. It's saying that a particular reason that a higher level reviewer or a board can send something back is an error resulting from constructive receipt of evidence prior to the notice of decision.
Yes, again, Your Honor, the Secretary's position is not that constructive possession is nothing in the AMA. It's restricted to what's in that regulation, and constructive receipt is specific to VA treatment records and VA's possession.
You're talking about subsection little 3 little I, right?
Yes, Your Honor, but that's the...
But the subsection two little I doesn't have any restriction as to the type of document. It just says resulting from constructive receipt of evidence, right? And subsection 3 was put into place to implement our decision, which I still think was right because I wrote it in Turner, but the Federal Circuit said it wasn't in Lange, right? And so the whole notion of subsection 3 was meant to implement a decision that has been undermined by the Federal Circuit. So to have the clear language of subsection 2 that just says evidence, and then subsection 3, which was based on a decision that now has been abrogated, at least in part.
So I would,
and I would say that on 2, rather than being based on the treatment record distinction, is based on the open versus closed record distinction. And that accords with VA's explanation of what they were doing in promulgating these regulations. Documents created while the record is open may be constructively received, and documents when it's closed can't.
So respectfully, I disagree, Your Honors, to read the part in C2 as referring to anything other than constructive receipt as defined in C3 is to read that provision out of the context of the rest of the regulation. Prior to the provision that both Your Honors are talking about in C2, also in C2, it's talking about constructive receipt as described in C3. So when constructive receipt is being talked about in the regulation, it's always been talked about in the context of the definition of C3. And my second...
Well, actually, it's not. It's not. It sometimes is and sometimes isn't, right? So you're referring to the generic start of subsection 2, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Where it talks about, where it does refer to C2, 3 little I, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
But isn't that telling? that when it says that VA, who wrote the regulation, right, VA knew how to refer to subsection 3, 3 little I, when it wanted to. It did it at the beginning. But then it doesn't in subsection 2 when it refers to evidence that is constructively. That to me actually points in exactly the opposite direction than you're going. It tells me when VA wants to refer just to treatment records, it knows how to refer to subsection 3. And it didn't do that in subsection 2, which I agree with Judge Jake with, aligns with the evidence submission portal windows.
Respectfully, we disagree, Your Honors. I'm not sure I understand your comment that says aligns with the evidentiary.
Meaning that, at least in the direct review context, right, when you file an NOD that seeks direct board review, mm-hmm. a magic moment is the date of the final of the date of the decision, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
That aligns, and I don't want to speak for Judge Jaquith, but the way I read it is, the idea that the parenthetical that I read in subsection 2 aligns with that notion on the direct review docket, right? Because it says an error that allows you to return is an error resulting from constructive receipt of evidence prior to the notice of decision.
I understand what you're saying now, Your Honor, in terms of
timing. When VA promulgated these regs and explained them in the the January 18th, 2019 Federal Register posting, they said that documents created while the record is closed do not become part of the record by virtue of constructive receipt, but documents created while the record is open may be constructively received.
Yes, Your Honor, but I would also add again, I go back the context of that. So first I would note that in the proposed rule, there was no constructive receipt at all. This provision was put in response to a comment that was very specific about VA treatment records being created right on that last moment day right before that AOJ decision. And I understand in reading that maybe the language got a little broad there in terms of the context of that comment, but it was very clear that it was very specific to VA treatment records. And that's what the regulation
in C2, does. Three little I, but not in C2, two little I.
We respectfully disagree, Your Honor, that the context, when you look at the context of whole of the regulation and in the commentary there, that it's all in the context of speaking about VA treatment records. But even moving beyond that.
A particularly difficult argument to prevail on in this context, where if there's another record that's more VAs or as much VAs as a VA treatment record, it's these NAS reports that are created pursuant to their contract, VA's contract with NAS.
What the Secretary would say, Your Honor, is you have to go back to whether or not such a reading is consistent with what Congress was trying to do with the AMA. Again, Congress's clear intent with the AMA is to provide appellants with a clear understanding of the administrative record, for VA to be able to list the evidence, for VA to be able to produce the evidence. That view of constructive possession or constructive receipt, that after-the-fact determination, does not allow the agency to comply with Congress's intent with the AMA.
But doesn't that seem odd that you'd say Congress was so intent on making sure that veterans knew the evidence that was considered that we're going to assume that that desire to help veterans with notice meant that Congress was going to preclude the use of a doctrine that would be helpful to veterans substantively by putting evidence constructively before the adjudicator? I mean, that's a hard sell, isn't it? That notice was so important that we're going to substantively take evidence out of the record that otherwise would be there.
Respectfully, Your Honor, the Secretary will argue it's not ours. So when you look at the other things that Congress put in place in the AMA, such as the supplemental claim and the ability to look at a rating decision and see that certain evidence was not considered, and then to choose that review option so that evidence can be considered. When you look at the facts of this case.
But wouldn't that take – so Congress then was saying that we know this is going to happen, but they can use this magic supplemental claim so they'll get to the same point they could have gotten to, but just in a longer period of time. That doesn't seem like Congress was going to be trying to do that either.
Congress would argue that it doesn't necessarily mean a longer time.
Oh, it's got to be a longer time, right? I mean, it by definition it is, right? Because if we're assuming, you keep talking about constructive possession as only being looking back. From our point of view, it always is looking back. But frankly, everything we do is looking back,
yes,
right? Because we're looking back to see whether there was an error. But if an RO actually said, oh, I know about these NAS reports because everybody knows what's in them, as you mm-hmm. said, then it wouldn't be that there would be an error. It would be that the NAS, they'd say, let's get a copy of the NAS report. I know where that is.
If I can, I think it would be helpful if I can phrase this in a different way. I think the problem that you identified is not unique to the AMA. It was the same problem that was encountered in the legacy system, which is how the constructive possession came about. The constructive possession, as admitted in Eusebio, is a remedy to a duty to assist issue. What our position is the secretary, not the secretary, Congress has already remedied that with the way that they have structured the AMA system such that constructive possession is not needed. Congress was also
the same problem with the same remedy. It's the RO, given the fame of these reports and their creation just for the adjudication of cases like Mr. Edwards, is the RO has these things, these reports, evaluates claims pursuant to those, and if they fail, if they don't, they forget, they don't get to it, whatever happens, that's a duty to assist error that sends it, that gets it sent right back.
Respectfully, here's
under 2802.
Respectfully, here's the difference, Your Honor. In the legacy system, it was always about going back. That's the churn. Coming up, going back to address these situations.
But
that's what the
mistakes in the adjudication of the claim still cause things to go back.
That's what the AMA was about. But when it comes to evidence, a lot of the churn was specifically about the introduction of new evidence. The AMA created a way where instead of having to go back, it can go forward. An example of this.
But this isn't the introduction of new evidence. Constructive possession is, or constructive receipt and possession is evidence that that VA at the RO level and at the board level already has. VA had this evidence created for their use, and you know, there's some irony in VA paying to have studies done. The cover of the study report says, knowing is not enough, we must apply, quoting the famed scientist Johann Goethe. Yet VA knows, but will not apply the study results unless the veteran prints out and sends in the 806-page 2010 update and the 986-page 2012 update. Is that the greater efficiency, the faster and fairer efficiency that the AMA was designed for?
Well, Your Honor, what the Secretary would argue when you're looking in the scenario of the same situation happening in the legacy system, the Secretary would argue that what is possible over here in the AMA is more efficient than in the legacy system. What is happening over here in the AMA, and I would use the Bowles decision as an example of this, in the AMA, that veteran went and submitted a supplemental claim. The case went forward with no penalty, continuous pursuit. The case went forward. They had already had a decision, but by the time the case came here, the court decided to go backwards when the case was already gone, had already gone forward with the supplemental claim, because that was what was possible in the AMA. All that happened when the court went backwards was created confusion because you had the evidence that was already considered on a better record at the stage where Congress expects the development to be done that has to be paired with, at the same time, the court sending the case back at the board level where Congress did not expect any development to be done with what is the agency supposed to be do with potentially competing decisions and competing determinations on the same evidence when the case had already gone forward. The AMA allows cases to continue to go forward at a more efficient pace.
Relevant evidence, right? Because if he tried to submit this report, right, based on what you said at the beginning about why there wouldn't be prejudicial error here, the report might not qualify as being relevant. And if the RO said that, said it's not relevant, then if he sought to appeal, the only if we're right, if this court is right in Lloyd, then the only issue that would be before the board on that appeal would be whether or not the RO was correct that the evidence wasn't relevant. And that's something that couldn't happen if there was constructive possession in the first in the first instance, right?
So the secretary would disagree with the premise of your argument, Your Honor, that a determination that there would be no prejudice here would be equivalent to a determination on new and relevant.
I didn't mean to say that. And if that came out, I was just saying that your argument to me about why this is any error would be non-prejudicial here, because everyone knows what the report says. And it wouldn't make a difference. I'm paraphrasing, right? What I'm saying is your argument would be, we don't need constructive possession because Mr. Veteran can go give the actual report on a supplemental claim.
That's correct.
But my point is that extra hurdle would be right up front. The first thing the RO would have to consider is whether that evidence was new and relevant. And on your take, they'd say it's not relevant.
That's where we disagree on it. That's not what I'm saying. My determination as to why the document would not rise to the level of showing prejudicial error is not the same for a determination on new and relevant. What I was trying to say about prejudice speaks nothing to whether or not the document would be new and relevant.
But you agree that there's an extra hurdle for a supplemental claim that a claimant has to cross over than there would be on an initial claim.
Yes, Your Honor, except what I would say about initial claim is that, when you're looking at this particular type of evidence, it's either coming in the record if there was some sort of duty to assist to get this, which would require certain evidence to be in the record, or I guess if the court had determined constructive possession, if it met those particular elements. But again, we would say that looking at the constructive possession part of it, that's an after-the-fact determination that would push up against some of the other things that Congress intended with the AMA.
It might be easier for VA if the veteran is required to submit a supplemental claim, but that's not how the system's set up to work. The veteran has to submit a supplemental claim if she or he failed to do something. When VA fails to do something, consider evidence it has in its possession, then it's VA's error not to be pushed off to require the veteran to take another step that's going to slow things further. And this argument illustrates the problem. You said at the beginning that the updates have no bearing on the veteran's claims here, and that couldn't be further from the truth. They're directly relevant to the basis for the claim. They provide nexus information about his condition. Obviously, they don't set it doesn't result in it being presumptively service-connected, but it's certainly relevant to a direct service connection claim.
So I'll respond in a few ways to your question, Your Honor. First, the NAS updates go both ways. So requiring them to be always, one, would be against the intent of Congress with the Agent Orange Act. They could have said that we would like for these to be considered in all of the cases, but they did not in all individual cases. But more than that, the information cuts both ways. It's not automatic because of the information contained in these documents that they automatically satisfy the nexus relevant. There could be, and this is the problem with constructive possession would place a record that a veteran may not want because it could not be helpful. That's the whole point of choice in the AMA. A veteran could choose to find other ways to satisfy that nexus element if the NES update does not do that for them. But any decision that puts them automatically in a veteran's record takes that choice away. But I would just add something else in response to your question, Your Honor. You made the point that it's, you know, replacing a duty. We respectfully disagree. We think that there's dueling duty. Sure, if there was an error that VA may have made as part of the duty to assist, that could be correct. But there's also responsibility. There's an expectation in the AMA by Congress that veterans, if they have evidence that they believe is helpful, to submit that evidence in support of their claim. They created the supplemental claim option for them to do that, to decide
this
a different
evidence
point.
VA has.
I mean, the veteran might be able to get it if they have the right resources, the computer resources, the 2,000 pages of paper, the money to pay for the postage, adding 2,000 pages to each record. It's possible, but to quote or maybe paraphrase an eminent scholar on this point, this could not possibly be the outcome of a rational system of adjudication.
Why don't you answer Judge Jakes' question, and then you can wrap up.
I'm sorry. Could you repeat the question there, Your Honor? I thought those were statements. The question.
We were talking about whose responsibility it was to fix this record hole. And it's clearly VA's, not the veterans, as illustrated by our discussion of the reports at issue here.
Understood, Your Honor. I would just reiterate our point that Congress created this system for a clear administrative record for the veterans to be able to understand. In this case, Mr. Edwards was able to understand when he got the original ALJ decision what evidence VA created, what evidence VA considered and what evidence it did not. And the evidence of record shows along the way, he recognized that the NAS updates were out there. Congress allowed provided a system that
actually
would have allowed
that information
to submit
in the record before the AOJ decision was made. It was in the board comparator board decisions that the veteran put in his February 2020 statement before the March 2020 rating decision, citing the 2010 update.
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, this court's case law has said that, statements hidden in documents or in other board decisions are not the type of things that would trigger the duty to assist. And I would make the point that there's been no argument that there's been a duty to assist violation in this case. The appellant has not made that argument. And so has waived that argument.
That is just part and parcel of the constructive possession question. I can imagine the court would find waiver under these circumstances.
Well, that wouldn't be respectfully. That wouldn't be consistent with the court's case law to not find waiver when the argument has not been made, Your Honor.
But that's really at the end of the day, sort of, in some sense, irrelevant in the sense that if we found that constructive possession applied and applied to this report, it wouldn't be a duty to assist error. It would be the board didn't discuss it. Right. Because if we say it's, and I know you disagree strongly, but if we say it was constructively before the RO, then the error is that nobody considered that as part of the mix of evidence.
Yes, Your Honor, and the Secretary's position would then be that any error in that regard is non-prejudicial.
Right. I got that point. But So, all right. Well, thank you, Mr. Scruggs.
Yes. Senator, just add that the secretary would request that the board's decision be affirmed.
Is it Leacock?
Leacock, yes, Your Honor. To clarify an earlier statement regarding substantive error or reasons and bases error, we argued the board erred in limiting how it considered the evidence of record, including board decisions and NAS updates, but the ultimate conclusions by the board were reasons and bases errors, and that's why we argued reasons and bases. Regarding the secretary's argument for the supplemental claim route being, you know, how the veteran should pursue this claim and making this harmless, as Your Honors pointed out, that wasn't, it's not an efficient route for the veteran to take. And in this case, appellant chose a remedy that would require adjudication or of the merits, rather than require him to leap another statutory hurdle imposed by the secretary. While the secretary seems to concede that the NAS updates would be new and relevant evidence, there's no guarantee that the agency would agree, and whether the VA adjudicator agrees is a game of chance, which could result in years of adjudication to correct, creating more churn where the secretary says they want to avoid that, which was observed in Lloyd v. Collins, where the claimant was stuck with the consequences of the supplemental claim review option. Furthermore, by choosing an appeal option that allows for the merits to be addressed, appellant has also preserved the right to expeditious treatment of the record pursuant to 38 CFR 20802C if he obtains a remand. Filing a supplemental claim results in a claimant playing a game of chance with whether they would obtain re-adjudication on the merits of the claim in the first place. And if a claimant wishes to avoid that by filing an appeal and requiring VA to correctly develop the record or return the board to return the claim for failure to consider evidence that was already in the record, they ought to be allowed to do so and not pigeonholed into an alternate solution merely because VA acknowledged that something that should have been reviewed in the first instance can also be considered new and relevant evidence. Furthermore, the secretary argued that 3103C limits constructive possession to VA treatment records, but Section C addresses submission of evidence to the record by the appellant and is inclusive and not exclusive. It includes VA treatment records in records that could be constructively possessed by the agency. It does not exclude it, as Your Honors noted. Section C2-2 is significantly more broad than C2-3. And until the final rule, constructive possession was not brought up in the context of the AMA. VA has never argued that constructive possession does not apply under the AMA until this litigation.
Just before you sit down, what is your response to Mr. Scruggs' point about even if we were to say that this was constructively possessed, that it would be a non-prejudicial error?
It would be prejudicial error, as Your Honors pointed out. It was raised before the AOJ. And VA was provided notice that the NAS updates addressed appellant's condition, and they had the duty to go obtain that. The board should have addressed that this was that they had notice that something was constructively before them that they should have addressed, and the board limiting itself to not considering the NAS updates was prejudicial error. And if
a lot of what you just said sounds to me like you're arguing it was a duty to assist error by the board.
The board's conclusions were reasons and bases errors. We're not arguing that every board would have remanded a claim after considering whether or not the NAS updates should have been addressed. We're arguing that in this case, the board erred by limiting the evidence of record that it considered. And the conclusions were reasons and bases errors.
What would your dream holding be?
That the court remands this matter for the board to address whether or not a remand is required, as the NAS updates were constructively before it under the Appeals Modernization Act, as the NAS updates were constructively before the AOJ.
Period.
If there are no further questions, thank you, Your Honors.
Well, thanks. We thank both counsel for their arguments here today. We're going to come down and greet.